From Michigan Radio, this is State of Opportunity. I'm Jen Wine. Nearly one in four children live in poverty in Michigan. For these children, the path to success is blocked by challenges in everyday life, from birth outcomes to nutrition to education. Over the next 3 years, Michigan Radio will be taking an in-depth look at the challenges facing Michigan families living in poverty, but also at the potential for clearing that path to success for Michigan's most vulnerable kids. Michigan Radio's Jennifer Guerra and Dustin Dwyer will bring us stories over the next 3 years, and they join me now. So more than 20% of children in Michigan, that number seems huge, and it can be hard to wrap your mind around. For someone who doesn't live in poverty, how can we understand what that really means, what it really looks like?
Yeah, that's a good question, and it's one that Dustin and I sort of struggled with when we started the project. So in order to sort of get into the project, we just kind of asked ourselves, what's the best way to look at this? And we wanted to focus on kids. So we started with a baby.
Aw, baby. What's his name?
We're going to call him Jacob. It's one of the popular baby names right now. Let's say Jacob has a single mom and she makes about $15,000 a year. Now, to see how life is different for Jacob than for, say, your baby born to typical middle-class parents, you actually have to rewind before all the crying, the cute cooing, before he's even born. Jacob has some disadvantages. His mom probably wasn't planning on having a baby, so statistics say it's less likely she had good prenatal care. She might not have even known she was pregnant for the first few months. It happens.
Okay, so Jacob is born.
And now he has to survive his first year, which in Michigan is harder than you think. Right now, Michigan's infant mortality rate is higher than most states. The average is 8 per 1,000 babies.
So that represents about between 900 and 1,000 babies who die before their first birthday. And it's hugely disproportionate. The African-American mom is triple the risk of having a baby die during that first year.
That's Jane Zender Merrill with the Michigan League for Human Services. She studies infant and maternal health in Michigan.
And let's talk about one possible risk factor for Jacob. Let's say his mom smoked. Nearly one in five pregnant moms in Michigan smoke, according to the League. It's one of the biggest indicators for Michigan's high infant mortality rate.
And it all goes back to what Jacob experienced in the womb, whether his mom was educated, whether she had resources or the tools to quit smoking, whether she could make it to all those prenatal doctor's visits.
So it's directly back to the well-being of the mom, the well-being of that pregnancy, as being critical to the life chances of those babies.
Now that Jacob is born, though, there are some ways to help him. For Dr. Paula Schreck, the first line of defense is breastfeeding. She calls breast milk the ultimate equalizer.
If you're talking about poverty, if you're talking about improving the health of a population, where best to start than hour one of life, providing optimal nutrition that's free?
Schreck runs a breastfeeding support group at St. John's Hospital in Detroit for low-income moms. She says breastfeeding alone decreases infant mortality rates by 30%. And research shows that breastfeeding could help improve baby Jacob's health, even his IQ.
Yeah, but Jen, this breastfeeding thing, I know people who didn't breastfeed their children. It's not because they're bad moms or they weren't educated or they're poor.
Right, absolutely. It can be a personal decision, but research does show that breastfeeding rates are lower for low-income and minority women.
Okay, so what about what comes next for Jacob?
A, B, C, E, F, G.
We know that in those first few years, his brain is just growing like crazy. And at this stage in life, language is really important. Brain research shows that if you don't learn language in these first few years, you're going to struggle with it your whole life. And here again, Jacob is at a disadvantage.
What you see is that middle-class children are exposed to many, many more words than working-class children.
This is the whole Hart-Risley study.
Right. Famous study done in the 90s. That person you just heard, by the way, is Fabian Pfeffer. He studies economic mobility at the University of Michigan. Before we get back to him, though, let's just talk about this Hart-Risley study for a minute.
Sure. So there are the two researchers, Hart and Risley. They followed a bunch of children from both low-income homes and middle-income homes for about 2 years. They recorded hundreds of hours of conversation between the kids and their parents and found that, on average, kids in the higher-income family heard about 2,000 words an hour. Kids like Jacob heard 600 words per hour. By the time Jacob is 4, we are talking about a 30 million word gap.
30 million fewer words before he even gets to kindergarten. And Jacob's mom also has less money for books and developmental toys.
What is in the box?
Pfeffer says by the time kids like Jacob enter kindergarten and take their first test,
there's already a gap when they come into school. So this is inequality in educational outcomes that has been established before they even enter schools, right?
What is it?
That gap never goes away as Jacob gets older. If anything, it gets worse. And the gap is big, really big. That part actually doesn't surprise researchers.
I think it's common knowledge, and it's certainly been scholarly knowledge for a long time. But the surprising thing was that it's been growing a lot.
Sean Reardon is a professor at Stanford who studies educational inequality. He published a paper last year showing that the gap in test scores between the well-off kids and the not-so-well-off kids has grown as much as 40% in the past few decades. The gap means that when Jacob gets to eighth grade, he'll be about where the well-off kids were in fourth grade.
That is a big gap.
Yeah, and Reardon says it's not growing just because kids in well-off families have more money. All parents are spending a lot more money on their children than they did a few decades ago. We're talking private preschool, ballet, summer camp. Those things pay off.
And of course, families with less resources just don't have the option to do that to the same extent. And so that's led to this kind of widening gap.
So then by the time Jacob is in high school,
this is an easy theorem. It says this, between two different x's.
Not only is he at a disadvantage, but that disadvantage is worse than it would have been a few decades ago. And the more Jacob falls behind, the more disillusioned and frustrated he becomes.
And eventually, he drops out. Sadly, he's not alone. There are some high schools in Detroit, Flint, and Grand Rapids where as many as a third of kids drop out and don't graduate.
So Jacob doesn't go to college,
which gives him fewer job opportunities, which means he's stuck in this cycle of poverty. The disadvantages just keep piling up for Jacob, but it doesn't have to be like that. So that's what this new project, State of Opportunity, is looking at. We're trying to spend the next 3 years trying to answer, what can we change to help Jacob and the thousands of other kids in poverty get ahead?
So this is going to be an intensive project. We'll have radio pieces, web features, outreach activities. Sarah Alvarez, our Public Insight Network journalist, will be connecting with people as well. Jen and Dustin, what else are we going to hear?
Well, we're not going to just be reporting on the statistics. We want to get the stories behind the numbers and talk to real families. So we're not going to do sort of, you know, fly-in reporting and then meet somebody for a day and then leave and do a story. You know, we'll do some of that, but we're going to be doing longitudinal reporting. So we'll be spending a great amount of time with families and kids living in poverty and following them over the course of the entire project and really seeing what resources are available, seeing where the gaps are. And we're really excited about it.
As you're starting the project and you're just starting to look at the scope of this issue in Michigan, have you been surprised by anything you found so far?
I would say I've been surprised by a couple of things. One belief that I probably had going into this was that if you look at the statistics, you can see where the sort of problems are. And I thought there would be just certain people who aren't being reached by programs and services that are out there. But the reality is there are so many programs and services in Michigan that they're touching a lot of people, and a lot of people are getting help. But there's a lot of people who are sort of in the middle where they, you know, you might have an outreach worker who talks to someone once, but then the next time they try to go there, the person's not home or they don't pick up their phone. And so it's not clear what the outcome will be for that person. So it's less cut and dry. You know, I guess I went in thinking that we know what some of the answers are. We know how to give people help, or we know what help people need. All we have to do is connect them to that help. And it's just really not that simple.
Yeah, and getting in touch with a lot of people is difficult. One woman I'm following doesn't have a phone. And so, you know, it's sort of hit or miss when I get to see her and I can kind of empathize with social workers now to see the struggles that they have in connecting with the people that they're trying to help. But there's just a lot of, I don't want to say issues, there's just a lot of
barriers,
yeah, that go along with that.
You know, we hear a lot of statistics and a lot of sad stories about poverty. Help us understand, for the average Michigander, why it's important to understand the impact poverty has on children.
So, Jen, I have two answers to that question. The first is kind of the idealistic answer, which is that in America, we believe everyone should have a chance to succeed. And it's not a controversial belief. It shows up in polls. It doesn't matter what side you're on politically. In America, we believe in opportunity. But the reality is, if you grow up in poverty, you have much less opportunity, and chances are you'll be in poverty your whole life. So that's the idealistic case, but there's also a pragmatic reason why you should care. And here I'd like to play some more tape from Fabian Pfeffer, the researcher at the U of M that we heard from earlier. Pfeffer told me, basically, these kids who start out with so many disadvantages, who ultimately drop out or don't go to college, they're not dumb. They could be achieving much, much more.
We're not using the potential we currently have, and we're leaving kids behind who could very well go to college and be successful and be job creators, which is what everyone talks about these days. And I think we're far from exhausting that potential.
So what he's saying there is, even from a selfish perspective, we should care that these kids are able to grow up, be successful, and contribute to a strong economy here in Michigan.
We've been speaking with Jennifer Guerra and Dustin Dwyer of Michigan Radio's reporting project, State of Opportunity. Jen, Dustin, we'll be looking forward to hearing more from you. Thanks so much.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Coming up, what do we believe about poverty and low-income families? Are our beliefs accurate, and where do they come from? And is the path out of poverty a more challenging one than it used to be, or does it just take self-determination? We want you to join the conversation. Call us at 866-255-2762. Leave us a question on the State of Opportunity Facebook or tweet us at State of Op. That's OPP. This is State of Opportunity from Michigan Radio.